This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us. 2 weeks ago, we heard from Representative Fred Keller of the 85th District of Pennsylvania, who is seeking the seat in Washington for the 12th Congressional District. Today, we are joined by his opponent. The Democrats selected Mark Friedenberg to be their candidate, and he's joined us today on the WPGM Community Forum to share his thoughts with our listeners. Mr. Friedenberg, thanks for joining us. If I can just ask you kind of a general question of why do you want to tackle a job like this? What led you to seek public office in the first place, a year ago?
For me, it's all about leaving behind a better world for our kids. I think we're called upon to do that. I've got two little girls, 5 and 3 years old. And I'm not too happy with the way that a lot of things are working in Washington these days, the debate around healthcare, especially, and the environment. So I thought it was important to set an example and to show that if you see something broken, you can roll up your sleeves and get to work fixing it.
Last year, you lost the race to Tom Marino, but then he resigned early this year. Your thoughts on that move? How has your party gotten behind you in your effort?
You know, Congressman Marino cited health concerns, and so I wish him a speedy recovery. But we are focused on taking this seat, and the party has been lined up 100% behind me. We've got volunteers, hundreds of them, all across the district, making phone calls, knocking on doors. We've got four offices across the district. It's really big. It's a quarter of the state by landmass area. So we actually just opened our fourth office. So we're in State College, Williamsport, Sunbury, and Towanda up in Bradford County. And we're knocking on doors that haven't been knocked on since the 2008 presidential campaign, making sure that everybody knows about the special election and that everybody who's a registered voter can vote on May 21st.
Okay. I would think that would make it a little tougher because it's might be confusing to some people that this is a special election, but it's also taking place on the day of the primary.
That's right. And so if you are not a Democrat or Republican, but you're a registered voter, you can still vote. There will be a third kind of ballot at every polling place, and this special election will be the only race on your ballot, except in a few places where there are some sort of local ballot referenda.
Okay. And let's talk about some specific issues, immigration being the big one that's been in the news so much lately. What kind of changes, if any, do we need to make to policy? And, what are your thoughts on the president's border wall?
You know, I see a great opportunity here for comprehensive bipartisan immigration reform. We've seen the outlines of this before in 2013, most recently. Leadership in Congress couldn't get it done. But I think we know where this is going to end, which is, of course, more funding for security at the border, which everybody agrees is critical. In some places, it could be expanding existing fencing. In some places, technology like cameras or drones. In other places, it could be increased personnel, putting more boots on the ground. Combined with reforms to our legal immigration system, making sure that we're able to continue to handle valid asylum claims. We need to make sure that we've got more immigration judges to be able to handle the increase in asylum claims that we've had over the past year or so at the southern border. Making sure that we're able to meet the needs that our businesses have here for high-skilled workers on those H-1B visas. And we need to make sure that we are, make sure that our agricultural community has access to the workforce that it needs. But we need to make sure that we are upholding American values at every turn. We're not putting children in cages. We're not tearing families apart. We can make a bipartisan immigration reform that gives us the security that we need while also making sure that we're able to stand up for our values and also make sure that we can get access to the workforce that we need.
Okay. I've heard people say the wall's more of a symbol because a lot of people aren't really coming over the border specifically anyway. They're flying here, overstaying a visa, whatever. Is that the case?
That's absolutely right. I mean, there are some practical issues with the wall and how one would even build it at some parts of the border. But that's exactly right. You know, we have people who are overstaying visas and we need some reform there, make sure that we can get a process in place to check in. But there is a real opportunity to grow our economy while also making sure our border is secure. We have ports of entry. We see a lot of drugs are coming through those ports of entry. When we see those busts, that's where they are. They're still coming through the ports of entry. So we're not going to close off our borders altogether to the rest of the world. So like in so many issues for me, it's, you know, what do the experts say? And the experts say, you know, let's take a look at expanding that fencing, but also the technology and also increased personnel.
Okay. As Pennsylvania considers recreational marijuana being legalized, the lieutenant governor's been on his listening tour. Even for the states that have legalized it, it doesn't connect with federal policy. So what are your thoughts on that? You know, what needs to be done in regards to that from Washington?
I support taking marijuana off the federal schedule. I just support legalization of recreational marijuana. I think this is an area where the government ought to be respecting personal liberty. We have many decades of history of people using marijuana, whether it was legal or not, and the world spins on. I think people can handle it responsibly in the same way that there are, well, you know, lots of other things that we let people do, regardless of whether it's a great personal decision or not. I don't think the government needs to be involved in it, but we can actually really profit from it here in Pennsylvania, too. That's not why we do it, but for production and manufacturing, things like hemp products, I think we're well positioned to be leaders in that in Pennsylvania. And then the medical marijuana piece is absolutely critical. It's shown so much promise. The science isn't all in yet, but it's medical marijuana has shown a lot of promise for treating chronic pain as an alternative to opioids and the addiction that can cause. And medical marijuana has also shown some promise as a treatment for the underlying addiction itself. But you're right that because of the federal rules, people are sort of living in a legal gray area when they have medical marijuana here in Pennsylvania or in other states, and I think we need to address that.
Some of the presidential candidates have already been talking about income inequality, the big difference between the haves and have-nots, that growing gap. What are your thoughts on that? What can we do to kind of bring back the middle class?
Yeah, and, you know, we've got, I talk about the winner-take-all economy even just in Pennsylvania. That, you know, at the 12th district, we are losing out on jobs and on high paying jobs to Philly and Pittsburgh and in other cities and other states as well, because we just haven't invested in the kinds of critical infrastructure that we need for business to succeed. Roads and bridges, of course, we need to, in certain cities like in Williamsport, we need to get a levy recertified or there's going to be a catastrophic sharp increase in flood insurance prices. That's going to drive business away. But rural broadband, I think, is at the heart of it because we have so many homes and businesses in this district that aren't connected to the internet or just that have DSL, which is not really high-speed internet. And you're not going to be able to compete on starting up businesses. You're not going to be able to be prepared for higher education. We're not going to be able to take advantage of telemedicine and how that can help rural communities like ours in the 12th district. So investing in infrastructure is a critical part of it. And then the other is taking a look at that 2017 GOP tax bill that added $1.5 trillion to the deficit. But 83% of the benefits of that went to the wealthiest Americans and to corporations, with only smaller temporary tax cuts for middle-class Americans, for working-class Americans. We need to make those middle-class tax cuts permanent and make sure that we're able to put more money into workers' pockets. They'll be able to spend it on the things that they need. That's going to help to stimulate the economy. That's going to help to create jobs is if we put more money into everyday Americans' pockets.
Okay. The 12th district isn't somewhere you want to say anything that would be construed as negative on guns, but what do we need to do in regards to guns? Should we have limits on the Second Amendment? And what, is it an absolute right that I can have any and all guns I wish? Or, are there things we can do to stop the gun violence?
Yes. And, you know, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. The Pennsylvania Constitution goes even further in protecting individual gun rights than the U.S. Constitution does. But even my opponent has voted for the red flag laws that we have in Pennsylvania that require domestic abusers to hand over their guns after a really thorough due process, after a thorough judicial review. And I think that's promising. That's a good vote, and that's an example of the kind of balancing that we need to do between Second Amendment rights and public health and safety. I'd like to see us address what's the number one cause of gun-related deaths in Pennsylvania and across the country, which is suicide. And people who have suicidal tendencies will almost always show some kind of sign of that, that friends and family members, if they're looking for it, could pick up on. And I'd like to see us have a process where we can get an extreme risk protection order again after judicial process, make sure we have a judge involved and everybody's rights are respected. But get an extremist protection order if somebody's presenting a risk to themselves or to somebody else, and temporarily take away the guns until that mental health crisis passes, and they almost always do. And that's actually less restrictive than the involuntary laws that we have in Pennsylvania now, making it temporary and only during the time of a mental health crisis, because that's the number one cause of gun-related death. We don't want to, we don't want to see people hurting themselves or anybody else.
Okay. In so many polls, congressmen aren't the most popular people, but, people feel like they elect somebody and then they are not looking out for them. How can people be assured that you will be there for them and do what's best for them?
Yeah, and I understand the frustration. And I think it starts with, who's financing the campaigns of congressmen and candidates? Because that has a lot to do with who they're going to listen to and whose phone calls they're going to take. I'm proud that the money that's financed my campaign is from individuals, mostly from people in the district, who believe in what I stand for. And I've pledged not to take a dime of corporate PAC money now or in any future election. My opponent, on the other hand, is funded mostly by corporate PACs, by the pharmaceutical companies, the Wall Street banks, companies like Comcast and so forth. And so those are going to be the people that he listens to. But I think the one to really keep an eye on is the group called the Club for Growth. It's a pretty radical group. They're out of the district that is dedicated to destroying Social Security as we know it and taking away people's hard-earned retirement savings. Club for Growth has made a goal of privatizing Social Security so that they will be able to, or their cronies will be able to collect fees on managing that that money and try to gamble with it and profit with your retirement savings. Club for Growth cleared the field for my opponent to get the primary, to get the nomination at the convention in Williamsport. They've endorsed his campaign now. He's proud of that endorsement, and he's deposited their checks. And so he's going to be listening to them, and he's going to be listening to what the Club for Growth would like to do on things like Social Security and cutting subsidies for our farmers here in central Pennsylvania. So I think a really important part of it is who's paying for or who's donating to campaigns. And I actually support a constitutional amendment to overturn the Citizens United decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, make sure that we take this unlimited dark money out of politics, make sure that when the congressmen are voting, they're doing it for their voters' interests and not for special interests. And then more generally, it's about being available and being accessible. And so I've already promised I'm going to have an open, unscripted town hall in every county, Hall 15, across the 12th Congressional District every year once I'm elected. So you can come, you can ask questions, you can yell at me if I say something you don't like. But showing that you're willing to listen to people, I think, is also incredibly important. That people feel like congressmen are neither seen nor heard. And we need to address that, because that is really shaking faith in the functioning of our democracy.
Do you feel like that the party is kind of pulling to the right and to the left? It's kind of left the idea of compromise as being so foreign.
I think so, and you're right. That there are some structural forces that are at play that make it harder for people to, or at least gives the appearance that it's harder for people to compromise. I think you have to start with an assumption that the other side, whoever they might be, is operating in good faith, that they at least believe what they are saying. But we have to be able to agree that there's at least a problem out there to be solved before we can talk about ways to solve a problem. I think about something like climate change. Man-made climate change is an existential threat that we face. We have a relatively short period of time to take decisive action and to have the U.S. be a leader in taking that action on the world stage before we face runaway climate change effects that are going to be irreversible. And we have a lot of people in Washington who still deny the basic climate science. And when we're in that position, it's impossible for us to agree on, okay, we've got a problem, so what are we going to do about it? There's a range of tools that we can use. But if we can't agree on the fact that there is a problem, we're not going to get anything done. And we're going to fail in that goal of leaving behind a better world for our kids. We're not going to have breathable air. We're not going to have drinkable water. We're going to have a completely altered planet because of our inability to tackle these problems head on in a way that the United States and the United States alone used to be able to do.
You've been listening to the program with Mark Friedenberg, the Democratic candidate for the 12th Congressional District, as we head toward next week's special election here in the 12th District of Pennsylvania. Thanks for being with us on the program.
This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the Community Forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.